Hello, and welcome to this pre-recorded session for Millennial 2018. And this one is with Faustian Spirit. So should I address you as Faustian? That just seems ridiculous.
Faust is just fine.
Faust, I'll call you Faust. So Faust, would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, I am Faustian Spirit. I'm a miniature YouTuber. I converse with people on and off streams, and I'm working on a project that we're going to talk about a little bit.
Talk about your how you got here.
How I got here. How far back do we want to go, man?
just the last 5 years, let's see.
Oh, last 5 years. Well, up until, I guess, 2015, I was inactive on the internet, more focused on the real world, involving local politics, state and county level for the most part. And I spent my early 20s, late teens, on the internet, in dissident circles, I guess you could say. Was introduced to many great minds, many great works.
And at this point, were you were right wing already?
Oh yeah.
Right, okay.
Since my teen years, and I'm in my mid 30s now. So, I ran for local office twice and won both times.
Well done. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, it was nothing major, not like a city council seat or anything. It's more like on the local party level. And that's kind of what got my foot in the door to working on various levels of campaigns, volunteering, coordinating volunteers, fundraising, the political dance, I guess you could say. And I never really stopped doing it. It's when I noticed, like, I guess you could say, the Donald Trump wave, the shitlords, the memes, etc. It really caught my attention with the level of activity that was going on.
And did you just observe that as an outsider, or were you off that political stripe yourself? I mean, I don't know how much you want to reveal. If you don't want to talk about that, it's fine.
Oh no, that's fine. I'm more of a ghostly figure, the lurking sort, as an observer, indeed. Never really got involved in social circles on the internet, I more use the internet as like a recruiting tool for local level stuff, it's like putting the word out, networking, but with a face-to-face component to it, This like weird collection of people from all over the world making memes and trolling the left and owning the libs and all that good times. It really reminded me a lot of the energy during the 2007-2008 Ron Paul years. So that caught my attention, and just noticing.
See, just before you go on, it's funny how the Ron Paul thing is now seen as, well, it's a historical thing now, isn't it? It's like a sort of prototype for the Trump thing, but nowhere near as big. I don't know. Is there anything you'd like to say about that? It just sort of interests me how we now speak about that in retrospect. I mean, it always happens, doesn't it? Because time moves on, and eventually, that was the past. It's not current anymore. How would you regard the Ron Paul thing now in retrospect?
I think it was incredible. I think that the Ron Paul thing is what led to the Trump thing. Steve Bannon kind of cut his teeth during the Ron Paul wave, I guess you could call it. And the challenge to the neoconservative evangelical death grip on the GOP was in full force in those days. More so now, I would argue. But back then there was a hell of a lot more up in the air, especially considering the demographics in the United States 10 years ago. way more counties, way more districts, way more electoral votes were held by majority white areas. And as we see that decline, there's shifts in that as well. So yeah, it's 10 years later, and in 10 more years, it could be considered a classic car. But I do think it played a significant role in both training the foot soldiers in like the political cultural war, as well as like demonstrating the power of online coordinating into the real world. It was like a direct pipeline from the internet to the real world, you know? Like, that's when we started seeing random people who'd never gotten involved in anything before finding some access through a website or a form or whatever to like real world groups of people doing stuff in real time, you know? So the fact that...
But would you say that had already been going on the left, and it was just the right was catching up?
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. Especially, I don't know if you remember, but the marches against the Iraq War in 2003, there was a lot of online coordination between the leftist groups back then.
I didn't know that. I mean, I was actually on the march in London. There was a march in London, and it still isn't known how many people were actually on that march. I remember a million was mentioned. I also saw something like 100,000 was. No one knows, but it was bloody huge. I was there observing because I was an art student, and I thought I was too clever to believe one thing or the other. So I just went as an observer, you know, to be detached and ironic about it all. That was my attitude at the time. But anyway, that was how I sort of witnessed that, and yeah, it was bloody big. And I remember that in the London March. Doubtless it was the same in America as well. In the London March, it was many, many different leftist groups. And I can't remember there being right-wing groups, actually. I think at the time, the right-wing was just mainstream conservatism, really. That was all that seemed to be visible, to me at least.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear your take on those times as like an outsider to American politics, because...
Well, I mean, just to place it for the sake of people who might not know, this was like March or April 2003.
Yeah, yeah. A full...
Really? Oh, yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah, almost 16 years ago. But it's interesting seeing the evolution of like these kind of online spheres of people and how they coordinate with one another over time, how they congeal over time, how they infight, break up, branch off, spread out, etc. I see a very similar pattern occurring in the dissident right now as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a big topic. I mean, do you want to... Let's finish off on the Ron Paul thing, and then we'll get to the Trump thing, and then we can talk about the alt-right and the dissident right, and then we'll get to multifractal electioneering.
Okay, yeah, we'll pile a few things on.
Yeah. Bear in mind, you've only got half an hour, so do what you can.
So, back in those days, in an effort to kind of oust the neoconservative power, we decided to look at the structure of our political system and find what weaknesses there were. And in doing so, I discovered a huge amount of empty seats for local office, like things you have to run for, you have to get on the ballot for to hold the position. And so there were over 100 empty seats in my hometown at the time. And in order hell. To right. it's actually quite incredible. Like, and I'll get to this, but just to paint a picture, the lowest level rung of elected office in the United States, it's called a precinct committee officer, generally speaking. And a little more than half of all of these seats in the entire United States are completely unoccupied.
I don't understand how that can even happen.
Well, it's like there's precincts, and then there's districts, and then there's counties, and then there's states, and then there's the nation. So the precinct is like the smallest gerrymandered subdivision within the Globo Homo Gayplex, essentially. Right. The smallest, tiniest unit. It's the millimeter of political power. However, I found out that there were so many unoccupied seats in my hometown that we stood a fairly good chance of winning the majority of those seats to take over our local GOP. Like to boot out the chairman, to boot out the treasurer, to boot out the social media coordinator, to basically clean house. And we almost succeeded. This ragtag group of Ron Paul libertarians, we got 49% of these seats. And while we didn't win the majority, we gained positions on the committee. We were able to introduce motions. We were able to successfully argue for platform changes. We were able to shape positions on, say, education policy, censorship on the local level, numerous factors we had influence in. And not only that, but we were able to put forth candidates of our choosing to run in the primaries as Republicans. So we had these Ron Paul libertarian types debating like the typical neoconservative boomer cucks. And this got us quite a few state seats in our state government. We got city council members elected from our group, and we started pushing to creep towards the state level and get our guys running as senators and congressmen, etc. So my concept of what I'm working on now is looking at the state of affairs for nationalists in the United States. And right now, how many nationalists are elected to office, any office in the United States? And it's like zero, one. Like, who are they? Where are they? What do they do?
Yeah.
I
mean, this is something where I'm not speaking for America here, but yeah, clearly it's this case everywhere. We need to work out what is the formula, what are the techniques for getting into power.
Right. And what I'm proposing is that since there are so many unoccupied seats in your precinct, I mean, some of them have been unoccupied for decades. I found one in my hometown that nobody had ran for that position for 29 years. I mean, it's so it doesn't even show up on the ballot. And so I think to myself, well, if nationalists are serious about their beliefs and their values, then it would only make sense that after a certain amount of time, they would start acting on those beliefs and values. And so my goal here is to kind of educate a very simple way for nationalists to put points on the board, to get their foot in the door in their local community, to engage with their beliefs and their values, and to kind of seize this moment of our president calling himself a nationalist. Like, what better time than now? And why not us?
Right, yeah. So before we get into that, let's go back to sort of from just a wee, because I was quite enjoying the history stuff as well. Sure. But from Ron Paul to Trump, and then that's more right-wing activism there. So would you like to say anything about that?
Yeah.
Like what happened in 2015 and 2016, you know?
So what they did to Ron Paul is arguably worse than what they did to Donald Trump. Like every dirty trick, every bureaucratic nightmare they could conjure, every election they could rig, every primary they could bully. I mean, it's unimaginable the level of corruption that occurs in the elections in the United States, all the way down to the local level. And they changed rules in the Republican National Committee, essentially forcing delegates to commit to their votes at their state conventions, meaning they couldn't switch their votes at the national convention.
Oh, right? Yes. Right. Yeah.
And so they switched these rules to prevent Ron Paul from sweeping the convention.
Yeah, didn't something similar happen with Hillary in New York in that area? So I'm sure I remember hearing something about this. If it's not ringing a bell with you, then I'll never remember it either.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that's not an isolated incident as well. I mean, they'll literally do and say anything to make sure their guys win. You know.
See, this is the thing, right? I was the left are absolutely shameless about power, and it's something that I think the right. See, I was going to give a speech last month about power, and one of the points I was going to make in it was this: that I think the left are, or at least this the establishment left, what we know of as the left, are shameless about this. They even while their academics and intellectuals and lobbyists and activists demonize the concept of power, the establishment left are. Just shameless about taking power, even I mean at any cost, like no matter like, how many people have to die for like be killed for Hillary to etc. It doesn't matter, they'll just do it, and they will lie and smear and demonize etc. whatever it takes. And in the meantime, the right are very reticent. They almost think that power is almost like a dirty thing to them.
I would argue that the conservatives, quote unquote conservatives, that they are more liberal than the liberals when it comes to power.
Oh well, if you're talking about the establishment GOP, then yeah. And again, I don't want to get too much into American politics because I'm not well versed in it, but it seems to me that they are very good at, in the same way that the Conservative Party in Britain, they're very good at holding power by playing the left's game on their behalf, almost.
Right. Yeah. In many ways, it's just a constant doubling down and negotiation to increase the size and scope of the state and decrease.
Exactly. But you're giving in to them in so many different ways. You're getting a few economic things your way, but nothing cultural, nothing that actually is going to last into the long term. So you've got office, but you haven't actually got power because you're a slave to someone else, to a different power center.
Right, right. And this is why I will always emphasize that local politics matter way more than national politics, to the point where we see just recently, we saw a sheriff here in Washington State in the United States. He refused to enforce the restrictions on guns. He just flat out refused to enforce the new gun control laws and said that where he's sheriff is going to be a sanctuary state for gun owners.
Bloody hell.
And it's like, what's interesting about power, right, is this guy is the sheriff. And if he's saying he's not going to enforce these laws, what does it take for them to rectify that situation? Like, they're going to have to apply force at some point, right? And so I think by taking a stand on the local level, it can kind of create a little fire in your community, and that fire can spread to nearby communities. The word of that can spread, you know? So
yeah,
I see this happening with nationalism here in the United States. Like the nationalist talking point, nationalism and America First, all that kind of Trumpian type stuff is taking root. I see it all the time. I mean, I travel in the MAGAPED, boomer, NPC, CivNat, like normie kind of conservative circles. And they're becoming less hesitant of the word, less nervous about the word, and they're like, on a core level, they agree with the overwhelming majority of what we have to say. It's just, for whatever reason, if you get this like, oh, you're alt-right, or oh, you're a national socialist, or whatever, you get this Nazi label, then all of a sudden anything you say is like bullshit. But if you're just a normal dude talking to people, they are very well receptive to having a future for their children and grandchildren, to having
borders. It's common sense.
Right. Right. I mean, little old ladies are agreeing with the statement that nationalism is pro-life. So,
well, that's the thing. I mean, it actually is. And then you realize that, well, whatever the opposite of nationalism is, it is probably therefore pro-death. And so it kind of is. I mean, this is why at the same time as you've got globalism being pushed and promoted everywhere, you've also got, for example, abortion being pushed everywhere. I mean, it works musically. You know, I know that someone would say that, oh, that's just paranoid, crazy, half-baked, but it does make sense. And it doesn't matter if you can see it happening all the time.
To the point where conservatives are embracing pro-choice positions as if that's a conservative position to take. It's just constant clown world. I mean, I really feel like this right-left paradigm has just gotten so convoluted that it's hard to make sense anymore. I mean, even on the left, it's like they're in full breakdown mode. You know, the different tribal intersections are constantly at war with one another, far more than what I see on the right.
Really? Like, that surprises me. Tell me about that.
Well, have you ever known a liberal to actually love their friends and family? I mean, typically these people are they thrive on drama and conflict and stupid disagreements, and they don't even know how to argue properly. They can't settle their differences like mature adults. I mean, that's my experience with them.
So are you saying, well, I mean, I can definitely see how that, I have some experience which, backs that up for sure. Yeah. I think that, but then we're getting into the psychology of, you know, the liberal, or the psychology of the progressive. I thought you were saying that there's discord among leftist organizations and groups. I think that's what you meant.
Yeah, constantly. I mean, like, for instance, the black identitarian groups are kind of waging a silent war against the Jewish identitarian groups. There's numerous lawsuits cropping up. For instance, like Harvard discriminating against Asians in favor of Jews, etc.
Ah, yes. And then also, you've also got the like BLM activists saying that they don't want white activists helping them anymore, that kind of thing, which is bad news for that guy who's the head of the, I forgot what his name is, but anyway, it doesn't matter. So you've got that kind of thing, that schism developing. We don't need white allies. And then also you've got the thing with between trans, you know, feminists and trans activists. And that's clearly, yeah. And then stuff like to do with Islam in Europe, you've got that versus gay rights and so on. I mean, clearly, yeah, I can see what you mean about discord between factions utilized by the left, for sure.
Yeah, and in many ways, I see kind of the discord in the right, like outside of our dissident circles and the purity spiraling, whatever, outside of that, just in the normie sphere, like the Fox News, you know, Wall Street Journal type conservatives. I'm sure you have similar over there in Europe.
Yeah.
Their infighting that they engage in, they have a different code to it. They have a different way of approaching it. I don't know, man. In my opinion, It's like they are desperately trying to find creative new ways to avoid the discussion of race and borders and nationalism.
Oh, don't get me started. No, it's just, well, you see this on the center as well. I mean, with the centrist individualists as well. I mean, they just, everyone knows, maybe I'm being over optimistic here, but it seems to me that everyone knows race is a thing. And so each one has to find a way to deny it, to avoid admitting it. And each one has to be a way that is in accord with his own worldview. So you've got the right winger and the centrist, and of course the leftist as well.
Oh, absolutely. So I kind of see this as a great opportunity, you know? Like if what we have as nationalists rings true with people on a values level, then why not use ourselves to transmit those values face to face with people who perhaps have never heard our arguments or have preconceived notions about our arguments. And when they're not confronted with the scary Nazi on TV, but instead hear someone talk about securing the border and building the wall, like for real, then they have a different reaction to it. Right. It's like, are conservatives going to be the ones that are like, oh, you're a Nazi? I think they're probably less likely to, especially when you're saying things that make sense. So,
yeah. If you're talking about like real everyday conservatives, then yeah.
And I kind of look at it this way, man. Like if we want to get things done, diagnostics are very important. Right.
Oh, but, absolutely.
But unless those diagnostics lead to solutions and actions that we can implement, then the diagnostics is kind of a waste of time. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm getting a really good feeling from this. It sounds like you actually want to get things done and, you know, move things forward, as opposed to so many on the right who, well, just want to complain. And
yeah,
you know, I've been guilty of that myself. I'm not claiming to be innocent of that.
Well, part of the reason why I call it multi-fractal electioneering is because the left, the quote-unquote left, or Echo's left, have deconstructed every aspect of our society, culture, race, civilization, etc. And they have attacked every single vector from every angle they possibly could incrementally over time. And what I'm suggesting is these tribal people who create bureaucratic, complex, bullshit machines, constantly justifying new positions, putting in place rules that they don't even enforce anymore, etc. Like, we can use that against them, okay? And all we have to do is stand up and take a step forward. I truly believe that. And there's many different ways to get involved. You know, there's political, cultural, scientific, environmental, like being community-minded, etc. Like, you don't have to get involved in politics. But I do think there is great appeal to nationalists who are genuine, who are honest, who are good people making a difference in their local community on a face-to-face level. I cannot stress how impactful that can be, to the point where it opens doors that you never thought possible.
Well, I mean, one thing leads to another, doesn't it?
Indeed.
It's something that's often forgotten.
Well, perhaps we all need a good reminder every now and then. You know,
I mean, it's a banal point to make, but it's one that needs to be made because people forget. I think, especially on the right, again, the left, I think, certain quarters among the left have an instinctual understanding that one thing leads to another, whereas the right tend to get mired in. Let's just say defeatism, for want of a a better word. So if you were to say, if you were to tell people what they should do, like the audience, what do you want them to do? Well, go on. What would you tell them?
Well, I look at it in two different ways, right? Because I am an American, so on a global level, like internationally speaking, to nationalists of all race, of all nations, I would suggest that instead of being afraid of engaging with people who you are convinced hate you, I would challenge you to get involved in your local community, to either run for a small level office or volunteer for somebody that you can at least tolerate, or get involved in an organization that does some sort of something positive and constructive. There's many different ways to get involved. You know, my focus has been on electoral politics, and I understand that's not for everyone, but I still think there is a role to play for each phenotype of person to contribute something positive. And I think by creating little tiny fires all over the world, little tiny fires in your town, you know, little tiny balls of energy, like that's what starts other things to start happening. It's like a catalyst almost.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So when it comes to the political stuff, are you in a position to advise people on how to run for office and so on?
Yeah, I've worked on a couple dozen campaigns. Like I said, I've been elected twice myself. I'm very autistic when it comes to these Talmudic bureaucratic systems that they've created. So, you know, like a D&D playbook, you look at all their rules and see what they can use to disqualify people, and then you know mitigate all of those factors and try and position people in a way where they can actually move forward rather than get stopped before they even start. So I'm very familiar with like how, the process to register for ballots, how to do the proper research to find out like the proper governmental office to go to, how to fill out the documents that you're required to, whether or not what they're actually doing on the local level is in accordance with state and federal law, because oftentimes it's not. So I do have a kind of a bulk of experience in dealing with these systems, and I offer my time to help navigate them. So
excellent. Well, yeah. Is there anything else you want to say about that?
Well, yes, I want to make something clear. Like, I don't think anyone can like just take over the Republican Party and nationalists can win and then everything will be all better. Instead, what I want to see happen is by people standing up and stepping forward, they can demonstrate whether or not their local community is hostile to white men who are nationalists, or if they're at least tolerant, if not favorable towards them. And I would like to encourage people to not live in enemy territory. Like I know this sounds bad, but if you find that if you try and run for office in your local community and all of the muscle and weight that they can muster comes up against you, don't stick it out. Don't try and fight through it. Don't sacrifice years of your life struggling against this. Like, you might be better off moving to a place where you feel safe and free. So, you know, it's not always about success. Okay. Sometimes it's about making the attempt and learning that there is no other option but failure. And then you have to retreat. Like, I don't want people to sacrifice themselves in a way.
Right. I understand exactly what you mean. You don't want people to learn the lesson of defeat. I mean, in the sense, learn the lesson of pessimism, defeatism.
Right. Instead, I think you know, in the nationalist spirit, we are individuals, but we do have to look at ourselves in a way as like a part of a body, you know, and where we do what we do creates like responses to us, you know? And if you're in a hostile, toxic, cancerous environment, like, do you really think you can thrive there? Is there any future for your children in that community?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Sometimes it's better to go to a place where nationalists, people who are concerned about the future, can get involved in actual power and use that power. And that sends a signal too, you know? So I think, yeah.
It all builds solidarity in the end, doesn't it?
I mean, I've experienced it. I hope others have as well. And hopefully over time, more of us will. You know, I'm sick of all the black pills, man. We need to start putting points on the board.
Yeah. All right. So, okay. So how can people contact you?
Well, I do spurts of YouTubing on my YouTube channel. That's just Faustian Spirit on YouTube. And then I'm on Twitter as well. And Gab, just Faustian Spirit, same icon that you see here. And if anyone's interested in getting involved in local politics, especially, and you want some help figuring out how to navigate the bureaucracy, like how do you do it? Please contact me. I will donate you my time. My goal is to get 1,000 men to run for local office in 2020. I'm up to over 300 right now. Things are going good in my local community up in my, you know, Whitetopia up here in North Idaho. So,
okay. Excellent.
Hope, guys, we can do this. We just have to get involved.
All right. Excellent. Well, let's leave it at that. So, Faustian Spirit, thank you for appearing in Millennial 2018.
Thank you so much, Wells. I really appreciate it.
Okay. I hope people contact you, and I hope the audience enjoyed it. So it's good night for now.
All right. Merry Christmas.